what should come to pass hereafter, and he that reveals secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. As Daniel, he's going to interpret the, he's going to tell him the dream first. But as for me, this, get me out of the way a little bit. Still not enough. For me, the secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have, more than any living, but for thy sake they shall make known the interpretation to the king, that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image, this great image whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. The image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, and I emphasize that there, without hands, meaning it was not done by humans, it was divinely done, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay and break them in pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together and became like the chaff of the summer flashing floors, and the wind carried them away, and then no place was found for them, and the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. So this is where we pretty much left off. So going into the actual interpretation, thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And I'm going to correlate this portion of it with a portion in chapter 7, which is another vision that Daniel had that helps us to see the comparison of us, how we can identify these different kingdoms and how we know down through history how they were interpreted. And that's over in Daniel 7. And so I'm going to kind of try to go back and forth between 2 and 7 for this portion. Kind of show the two dreams and the four visions that were seen. And they kind of supplement each other. So over in Daniel 7:1, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. And Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea, and four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse from one another. And the first was like a lion, and had eagle's wings. And I beheld till the wings thereof was plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth, and made stand upon the feet, as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. Now this first vision of a lion represents Babylonian Empire. And it's pretty well known that the Babylonian Empire symbol was actually a winged lion. And here's an example of it that was found in some of the ruins of Babylon. So going back to chapter 2. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them, and all, thou art this head of gold. And there's a note in my Bible that said that basically God had allowed him to have universal control over the known world of that time, but that he didn't ever come to filtration. And that some believe that it's based on the fact that if he would have realized who God was and that he was one in control, Nebuchadnezzar might have been given more power than he had. And we'll get into that a little bit in the next chapter when it talks about chapter 4, when it talks about a period of time that Nebuchadnezzar is tested by God. Verse 39. Now we're going to move into the second part of the vision. After thee shall arise another kingdom, inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. Now it's really important to understand that Daniel at this point did not know exactly what these represented. We know today, based on history, and a little bit from the vision in 7:5, we can tell a few things. Over in Daniel 7:5 is Daniel's vision of this same period of time. And behold, another beast, a second, like to a bear, and it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in its mouth of it, between the teeth of it. And they said, thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. So this represents the two portions of the Mede and Persian Empire. And the reason it was lifted up on one side is it more or less represents that one was stronger than the other. And then the fact that it was very domineering, it took over the area, and it was very ruthless. The other thing to realize about this particular vision, too, this one and the one in chapter 2, is the fact that the different metals, as it goes down the statue, become stronger and stronger and more fierce until we get to the Roman Empire, which was the worst of all of them when it came to killing and destruction. And you kind of see it in the types of metal. If you know anything about metal, gold is very soft. It's beautiful, and it has a lot of, very expensive. It was wealthy, and the Babylonian Empire was known for that. Then you get into the silver, still fairly a precious metal, but a little bit more hard. And that's what we're talking about here. Then we get into brass, and brass is even a little bit stronger yet. It can resist fire better than the other two. And, of course, we get into iron, which is the hardest of them all, which would be the Roman Empire. And this second portion has a third vision over in Daniel 8:22. We'll get into all these in more detail as we move through Daniel. But the ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Mede and Persia. So you can see when Daniel had this particular vision, he knew for sure who the second kingdom was going to be. That's after this point in time. And after this, this is still Daniel 7. And after this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it. Now this represents Alexandria and the Grecian Empire. And as you study history, you'll find out that Alexandria was very swift. He took over most of this area very quickly. In fact, there was some stories that that he was in tears because he had no more areas to conquer. The Grecian Empire and Alexander took over all the known world at that time. And he was actually fairly young. He died pretty young, too, from some people say being depressed about not being able to conquer more land. But after he died, and the kingdom fell under his four generals, and we can see in this prophecy here that says the four wings of a fowl, the beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. So that when the Grecian Empire broke up, it broke up into four pieces. And that kind of goes into the area we'll be talking about more when it comes into the silent years before the Roman Empire. And on this particular one over in Daniel 8:21 and 22, and the rough goat is the king of Grecia, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. This is talking about those four different broken up. Now that's being broken, whereas four stood up from it. Four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power. So it went from one king, being Alexander, to the four kings, the four, it's actually generals that took over the kingdom after that. And this is real brief, kind of give a little overview of the entire book, where we're heading. Nothing to realize is when I'm in chapter 8, that's actually has to do more with the Jewish nation, and we'll show the differences when we get there. Because once we leave chapter 7, we're not talking about the Gentile world, and we're centering more on the Jewish nation when we get into chapter 8 through 12. Okay, back to Daniel 2, verse 40. And the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces, and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these, shall it break in pieces and bruise. verse 41. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. So this is getting into the feet area. And a lot of different theories about exactly what we're talking about here, the iron mixed with miry clay. And I'll share some thoughts I have. I finish up here with Daniel. And the toes and of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And just as a correlation to the division in Daniel 7:24, and the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall arise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings. Now, this particular vision, I believe, is getting into the actual tribulation and the Antichrist, and that into that period of time that hasn't happened yet, because when the Roman Empire broke up, it actually broke up into more than 10, and there was no kings, 10 countries. They were ruled by different leaders, but that there was more than 10. And so we can't prove that this thing actually has happened yet. There's a lot of speculation about exactly what these 10 horns or the 10 toes we see in 42 actually stand for. And there's a couple of theories, and that's why I showed you that map. And these get really kind of speculative. But just finishing up here in Daniel 7, before I jump into what I want to talk about in this area. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws. And they shall be given into his hand until a time and a times and a dividing of time. That term there, you'll see it, we'll see it again when we get to chapter 9, but basically time is one period of time. Times is the one thing in Hebrew that we don't have in English is something that they call a duo, where it's actually two times. But we do you know, singular and many, or a few, which some try to equate to three, but it could actually mean more. The Hebrew actually has time and times. Then dividing of time would be half of one period of time. We'll see this a lot in chapter 9, as standing for 3.5 years. Here it could stand for 3.5 years, which is speaking about the time of the tribulation. Now I wanted to speak about, just want to mention that I think that as we move closer and closer to the period of time known as the tribulation, and no one knows when it is, that this particular prophecy in Daniel 12:4, I think, is important to understand. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book even to the time of the end, and many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. And a lot of people interpret this to mean that as we move closer and closer to the end times, one, we'll be able to move faster across the planet, which we already do by flying, but that's been happening for a long time now. And then knowledge shall be increased. And ever since the computer age, which started somewhere in the 50s, pretty much knowledge doubles about every 3 years, so that we can see that we're in a period of time that this prophecy could have been talking about. But I also think it stands for a spiritual thing, that we'll understand things of the Bible better as we get closer. And so I think those that are going to be in the tribulation are actually going to really know exactly what these verses are saying. We're still kind of speculating a little bit. So I want to talk a little bit, or just a few other things, about knowledge increasing over in Daniel 8:26. And the vision of this evening and the morning which was told is true, wherefore shut thou up the vision, for it shall be for many days. And then over is also in Daniel 10:14. Now I am come to make thee understand what shall befall thy people in the latter days, for yet the vision is for many days. So I believe that all these verses, and again we see we're here in chapter 8 and 10, which would be the Jewish portion, that this whole portion of the feet is talking about the tribulation period, and it'll be after we're gone in the rapture. But at least in my studies, I've seen something that kind of always have gotten me kind of curious. So back to Daniel 2:43. Whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. That seed of men has really always bugged me, and I've done a lot of study on it, many, many, many hours. And it takes you back all the way to Genesis. So I just want to take a minute and kind of look at that term seed of men. And it's actually, there's an old saying that the first place something is mentioned in the Bible is probably the most important. And it goes back to Genesis 3:15. And the famous scene where Adam and Eve were deceived by Satan, and God produces a curse on the nation. And it's the first time that this idea of the seed of men is talked about. And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed, and shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel. And realize that nature of saying women do not have seeds. They have the eggs, and that men have the seeds. And that so the seed we're talking about here is Jesus Christ, of the woman. And then the other seed is Satan. And what's going to happen through the course of time. And I truly believe that Satan at this point realizes that his time, that he already knows what's going to happen to him in the end. But he's going to delay that as long as possible. And so I'm just going to run through some verses about some other places that we see the seed of men talked about. And what I believe it leads to is that Satan is going to try his best to stop this from the seed of the woman from ever happening. And the first place we see this is in Genesis, on the famous flood. In Genesis 6:1-9. And it came to pass, when men began to multiply in the face of the earth, and the daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all that which they chose. And the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with men, for that he also is flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown. I believe that verse right there is talking about the sons of God is referenced also in Job as being the angels, those that approach God. And the sons of God in this particular case can also mean fallen angels. And I believe that's what they're talking about. And that somehow Satan had tried to upset the seed of men by inflicting a non-human the problems with the daughters of men, causing corruption in the seed so that Jesus couldn't be born. As we go along here, and God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And he repented the Lord that he had made man on earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, and the creepy thing, and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And this is the other verse that speaks to the same thing. These are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. And I believe this speaks to the fact that Noah, in particular, was not affected by this corruption of the world, and hence he was saved out of it. And it basically, this is talking about the fact. And the main reason I mention this is because I could do a study on just all the ways that Satan has tried to stop the birth of Jesus Christ. We think about when Jesus was born and all the babies under 2 years old were killed to try to stop him from being, for becoming our Savior. And there's other times that, like when Jesus was almost stoned near the temple by the Pharisees, and he slipped away. And so many, and I believe that that Satan is still trying to extend that period of time that he has control of the earth for as long as possible. So I think that that particular prophecy there in Daniel is speaking to that. But just a few other places I'll mention, and I won't get into a lot of detail because it is speculative, but over in Matthew 24:37-39, Jesus himself makes a point of bringing this up. And that's what always got my curiosity, is that even Jesus wanted to really make sure we understood. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Now this particular coming, I believe, is the second coming, at the end of the tribulation, and that during the period of the tribulation, that things are going to be happening that are very similar to Noah's time frame. And if you want to really get into this study, follow my Revelation series, and I get really in depth into some of this stuff when it comes to some of the things we see in Revelation. But also talking about these particular angels that were spoken of in Genesis 6, Peter makes a comment about them also. For if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved until judgment, and spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that after should live ungodly. And this gives more confirmation to me, besides Matthew, that period of time in Genesis was pivotal when it came to world history. There's one more place over in Jude, verse 6 and 7. This is the brother of Jesus, and he's speaking. He also mentions it. And the angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation. And that old habitation isn't just, it has some more to do with their bodies. It can also mean a house or leaving a place of residency, but it also can mean leaving their due course of where they're inhabiting, and it could also include their body themselves. He hath reserved an everlasting chains under darkness until the judgment of the great day, even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them, in like manner giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh, another interesting term, are set forth for an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. So whatever these angels did was really, really bad. I mean, they are in the deepest part of hell. And because of what they did, God ended up destroying the entire world. And so to me, that speaks volumes about, I don't think it was just a casual sin, or maybe that somebody lived with somebody else out of wedlock, or something along that line. This was much, much more serious. And so just to end this portion, in Revelation 9:6 is a verse that also has always kind of made me wonder what it means. And I still don't know. And in these days shall men seek death, and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. And what kind of shape could we be in where we could not commit suicide? Very interesting verse. So that's my take on this, on that seed of men, and the where it says that iron won't mix with miry clay. And just to go back to that portion again. The other thing I'll mention about that is that if you look at the two elements that talk about there, miry clay, actually over in Isaiah, I think it's Isaiah 6. Nope, not here. Psalms. I know I put it in here. I just got to find it. Well, what I wanted to point out is the fact that miry clay is used as a term to indicate. If you remember back in Genesis, and I thought I put the verse in here, but I didn't. It talks about God formed us out of the dust of the dirt of the earth. So I kind of see miry clay as being kind of representative of the flesh of us as human. And then I see the steel, obviously, as something man-made, something non-human, maybe mechanical in nature, and somehow that they don't mix. And there's people out there that actually have a thought that it could indicate some sort of a intelligence. And if you ever get into looking at some of the things that are going on in this world, artificial intelligence and where it's heading. And it's rather interesting when you start getting into biogenics and things of that nature, where it's starting to replace a lot of us, a lot of parts of the human body with mechanical things. And I wonder if that has something to do with it. But again, it's a speculation, and I won't dwell any further. If you're more curious about my real feelings, you can see me after, and I'll tell you. Because we're live streaming, I can't really say right now. Let's see, where am I? Daniel 2:44. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms and shall stand forever. And I believe that kingdom we're talking about here is the kingdom that God is going to set up through Jesus Christ, who's going to be in charge of it during the millennium kingdom. And I think I'll stop there. I'll stop there for today. We got, it's almost quarter of. So let's end with a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this time to look into your word, Lord. And thank you and help us to get a better understanding of some of these verses that you can help us to understand them even deeper as we move forward in time. And we give you all the praise and thanks. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Any questions, by the way?